Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining the future of education one inspired story at a time. I thought today what I would do is actually tie together the last three podcasts that we've had because I've run out of time on each one of them and still had so much to share when it came to activities for students of any age, young, all the way up to university age, of course, to be able to self-govern, to self-manage, to lead their own learning and to lead their own lives. So we're going to have a look at a couple of activities which will certainly help step up into the leadership space, continue sharing some of the activities around circles and the power of using circles, particularly with decision making. And then, of course, when we were talking about technology, technological intelligence, which is often known as AI today, and the use of that in our learning and how much it's affecting us. And as I had mentioned before, I was actually going to, with some students, we were going to hold an AI forum, and the students actually researched different questions that they thought were really pertinent to mankind, pretty much, and then presented their findings in any way that they chose. So some of them ended up, it was amazing. It was amazing. I wish you could have seen it. Some of them created rap songs. Some of them created podcasts or videos like movies and drama reenactments. Quite a few of them did infographics and research presentations and formal speeches, a little bit like a TED talk, I guess. And the learning that they had, the deep learning that they had just by investigating questions. So these are some of the questions that they investigated. What makes human creativity unique? And that group really looked at the amount of technology that is producing music today, producing art today, and writing books today. So where does the creativity begin and where does it end when it comes to human and technology? And we know that it's having a huge effect, a massive effect. And there are a lot of artists and authors out there that are really starting to question what's the point when someone, you know, technology can write a poem in 30 seconds, you know, 10 seconds even, that might take them a couple of hours to actually draft, or possibly a day to draft and craft and deliberate over every single word. And then, of course, you've got lots of music and musicians, because you can get technology to write lyrics almost instantly and then create and write the music as well. So there's a lot of situations, I guess. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were actually from out of town, and they talked about their local writing group had completely dissolved with all of their writing competitions because the judges could no longer decide or determine what was written by humans, mankind, and what was actually written by technology. And this is a sad state of affairs that we're in. And the students were sort of in two minds. Some of them really wanted to embrace this technology because it can help you and it can make you more efficient if you're using it as a tool. But their message that they had was, a tool is one thing, but getting it to do the thinking for you is a very dangerous slippery slope to go down, because at what stage do you lose your human quality and your creativity? It was amazing, actually, some of the things that they shared. And it was really that when is it a tool and when does it become a crutch? When do you become absolutely reliant on it? And it does. If you're not thinking, then it could possibly replace the thinking for you. Others decided to look on the integrity and how do you stay in academic integrity and looked at the academic world, and recommended quite a few fantastic strategies, I guess, for moving forward. And one of them was actually training of staff, training of educators, so that they were aware of the programs that were out there, because not all of the AI detectors and filters are accurate as well. So having that, I mean, the programs are coming out faster than we can keep our heads together with it, but a cold blanket ban is simply not working because students will always find a way around that. And there was a lot of angst from some of the students who were really A students. So students who were high performing felt quite anxious, and they expressed the fact that they would lose their edge if other students, and how fair would it be if other students were using AI when they are using 100% of their own thinking, I guess, in their own work. So there was that conversation around, some of them felt the need for them to start using it as the technology to enhance what they were already doing, because they felt that they were going to lose their competitive edge, I guess, is probably where they were coming from. Not that they expressed competitive edge, but they didn't want to be left behind because lots of other students are using this technology. So there's a lot of deep conversations that were had in this AI forum. And I just wanted to bring that up and sort of wrap that in a big fat bow and come back to it, because it was the best day with listening to them sharing. And of course, we had students that were the MC. They managed and ran the whole conference, the whole forum. It was 100% student-led. And how we did that was we used circles. So I'm going to segue into that as well, because one of my recent podcasts, we were talking about the power of circles and how it can be used as a fantastic tool within the learning process. And I did dive back then into the history of circles and how it's used in many different cultures, of course. But learning and inquiry circles was how we used it when it came to the AI forum. So the first thing we did was sit all of the students in one room and have a massive discussion. It was a really very open discussion around, why should we have the forum? Do we even want to do a forum? What it will look like? We basically laid everything out on the table and had that discussion. And lots of students got to share. We got to vote. And they also, sometimes they would turn to the person next to them and have a discussion. And then we would share, like we were sitting in a circle, but then we would ask people if they would like to share their perspectives. And when we voted, any students who were against it, whatever it was we were voting for, were then asked to share their reasons why, if they felt safe to or if they wanted to. So would you like to share the reason why? Many of them did, and some of them did bring up really good ideas, which then brought us back to the drawing board, and we would all say, okay, let's consider this, and then we would re-vote. So having this decision-making circle and fitting it into that learning inquiry where they watched a stimulus. So we did actually watch I don't even know where I got it from. It was almost like a YouTube clip, I guess, of how China are using AI in classrooms. And the clip was very short, probably about 5 minutes, and it was around how they had this headband that basically sat on the third eye of the students in the classroom. The children looked about 7 or 8 years old, and then the headband came back behind the ears and had like a little, oh, I guess it was a tiny little box that sat behind their ears. So there were three pulse points that this headband actually monitored. And in real time, the data was sent to a laptop for the teacher at the front of the classroom. And the whole point of the story was sharing how they were using this data and this technology in real time to be able to monitor if the children were concentrating at any given time. So the teacher could see if there were any lapses in concentration, and the children could then be rewarded or possibly have consequences if they were not doing their work. Another layer of the YouTube clip that we were watching was that the data was then sent every 10 minutes to the parents of the children in that classroom. And so all of the parents would receive on their phones a report to show where their student was with the concentration and the data of the rest of the class so that they can compare their child to the rest of the classroom. So, and this was, I guess, an experiment that was happening, a social experiment that was happening in the classroom with technology. But after watching that stimulus, we had such an amazing discussion around, what is privacy, the fact that the children aren't robots, and why is this experiment happening on children with technology that, what if it's not failing? What if it's functioning? And some of the children did express that they liked the technology. It helped them concentrate more. And there were quite a lot of them that also said that they didn't like it whatsoever. They felt quite, some of them got heavily, severely punished when they got home if they were not concentrating, I guess, or their results weren't as high as what they needed to. And the results that they were talking about were up to 95%. 95% is very, very high. So it was quite alarming, the results or the reaction, I guess, from the students that were watching it with me sitting in the circle. We were watching the clip, the stimulus clip, and then having this rich discussion around what does this mean? And if you were a mother, would you allow your child and sign your child up to be in this situation? And where do we feel that education is heading if this is what some of the countries are starting to trial at this stage? So there were lots of open-ended questions, lots of discussions, lots of sharing their own opinions. And we did this before they went on to do their research project to look at facts. Because for the forum, they had to choose their own question, investigation that they wanted to look at. And then they had to look at the pros and the cons. They had to have a balanced debate. They had to have a balanced argument. They couldn't just look at one and be biased. Regardless of what their personal opinion was, they needed to try and research all of the facts that they possibly could before they came back and then decided to share how it was that they felt. So the learning and the inquiry circles and the decision-making circles was really integral in part of putting the AI forum together. And as a teacher, I was pretty much behind the scenes, the facilitator. Every now and then I would chime in with conversation, but I was definitely not the center of knowledge, definitely not in that situation. And it was really great, because we got to explore lots of ideas. Yes, I admit sometimes I did share my opinion, but I always made sure that I shared it last and that the students got to have their say first. And sometimes when I shared my opinion, then I would use the words, I'm curious, and I would throw another question out there. So I would say, what about this? And then I'm curious about this. And then we would then dive back into another open-ended question, I guess. It was really, it really turned it up, turned it, turned out, sorry, to be a student-led learning. And I guess the word that's coming to me is co-creation. It wasn't just one person researching by themselves. It really was a co-creation and a collaboration with the whole group. And let's face it, isn't that what we would like our society to be, where we're all leaning in the same direction, where everybody gets to honestly have an authentic say and express in a safe way how they feel and be able to question and explore rather than just live life through default and have things decided for us? Because as they discovered and shared, if you don't do the thinking, and do the questioning, someone else is going to do the thinking for you. And when they had a look around, they realized that a lot of our society is exactly that. Schools do the thinking for the children. They basically just deliver content. Where did the content come from? Is the content biased? How do we know? Society, governments, councils, local councils make the decisions for the local community. And yes, technically they do get to vote on the person or the group that's representing them, but do they get a say as to all of the decisions that's being made in the community? Not always, not always. And so where do we stand with that, and what should that or what that could that look like? So it was a really worthwhile activity. So my practical tips for educators, if you're planning to trial and go down this path of trying these sorts of things, would be to make sure you're defining agreements before you start any process. This always needs to be agreements within the group of how things are going to happen moving forward. And the agreements are things like making sure you're fully present and you're listening. If someone is talking in the circle, you're not having a conversation and then you're not drifting off, and you certainly don't have any technology in your hand and where you're staring at it. You're fully present. Respecting perspectives and respecting differences. So I actually did have a massive discussion about this, and I actually drew an image on the board. So I drew an object on the board. So let me just think if I drew, for example, a tree or, I don't know, a computer. If I drew that on the board, and then I actually, around that object, drew different little mini people standing in different ways, sort of almost like a circle around the object. And we just had the discussion around one person who might be at the bottom looking up towards the object is looking from one direction, but they cannot see the same perspective as the person that's standing on the opposite side looking at the same object. Sometimes you're looking at the same object or the same situation, but you're seeing it with a completely different lens, and your own cultural background and your own social programming from your family or from your society. And sometimes you don't see the whole picture. Sometimes you cannot see the entire piece of the object, and you're not, what they're seeing on their side might be different to what you're seeing from your perspective. So for us to stop and to be able to take note of that so that we can respect the differences, but together, when we're all sharing our perspectives, we can see more of the whole picture and we can co-create in a much stronger way. And this was a really valuable activity. To have that discussion before we got to talking about the circles. The other one was to speak truthfully. I mean, obviously, fight or flight and scanning for social threat is what our brains are wired to do, hardwired to do. And you never know the personalities in the room. There might be someone who might be making snide comments at lunchtime when the teacher's not there. These sorts of things happen all of the time in high schools in particular. So being aware that it needs to be safe that the person gets to speak their truth without judgment. And I really feel fairly confident that this happened in this space because everyone was talking about something in an objective way, and certainly seemed to respect that. The circles needed to be regular. So with the AI forum, we came back together. We just didn't do it one as a one-off. We came back together in the planning session when we decided to plan, and then we came back together at the end to finish it off. We came back together to discuss what did we learn from this, what do we do from here. So the circles were actually quite regular. And of course, it was age appropriate. Now, I didn't use a talking stick, which is what many people do. They might use, like a small bean bag or a soft toy or a ball or a rock or a shell. I have used shells in the past. I didn't use that for this perspective, but that's because the students were old enough. I don't feel like they actually needed it. But it is something that you can definitely use. And the last point that I would make as advice for any educators that decide to trial this is to allow space for silence and for pause. The reason being is because sometimes when you put a question out there, you do need to pause and give them time for reflection and to really take it on board and to tap into their own notion, their own heart space, their own intuition, and really consider. so that they're not just talking off the top of their heads, which sometimes gets, everybody in trouble in life. So I would often say, I'm going to ask a question, and I'm just all going to give you 30 seconds to just stop and think about it, and then we're going to discuss. So I didn't say that all of the time, but there were certain times during the circle process that I did actually deliberately use pause and reflection. And it was really valuable. I would do it again. I would definitely do it again. I possibly could have done it more, actually. And what I did notice is when we had our second circle, which was the planning phase, and I actually was not part of that circle. I was standing back and observing because the students ran it themselves. I noticed that they actually modeled that, and they also had their own pause time for people to stop and think, and to consider. And then they actually did the sharing. So they took that on board, which means that they must have valued the experience. Then it must have been valuable for them. So that was really good evidence for me that that was a worthwhile strategy, which is why I wanted to mention that today as well. All voices matter, leadership can be heard, and really our community and our classroom really thrived through the listening, and it deepened it. It's a pity it's the end of the year, the learning year here, because in Australia school finishes next week, actually. But I would definitely next year look at starting circles and using circles in something like this sooner rather than later to the depth. I mean, I've always used conflict resolution circles or those sorts of things, but this activity was actually really worthwhile. So the solutions really emerged when everyone wanted to contribute, and there was just no hierarchy. That's what I really liked. It took out the social hierarchy as well, which was really interesting. The other thing I wanted to point out was one group decided to actually look at technology that was coming that was not necessarily in the mainstream. And they brought up a couple of pieces of technology that were really fascinating and really made us all very quite curious around what's actually out there. So one of them was they were looking at consciousness technology. And this group, I've actually got the handout in front of me so I can read it because I didn't do the research, they did. There were three in particular. One was an energy responsive environment. Now, I was assuming that they were getting this from virtual reality type thinking, but they said the spaces respond to the human presence through light, vibration, or sound frequencies, and they reflect the emotion, the thought, or the intention. So they were talking about imagining having a classroom where the walls of the classroom actually shimmer subtly with the group's collective calm or the group's curiosity. So it mirrors back the human presence and the human thought or the intention that's happening. So measuring resonance instead of compliance. And that actually made them curious because they were thinking, okay, well, if this technology is actually apparently out there, how different is that to the YouTube clip we found with the headband on the third eye with those young children, where it was measuring their responses, but just physically on their head? Is there really any difference to this? So there was a really good discussion about that around where is it invasive and where is it actually helpful? And of course, universal law, do no harm. So that was actually a really rich talking point for that one. Of course, the holographic technology, it's the cool thing at the moment for students to talk about. And they were really keen to have a look at the holographic collaboration fields. So teams could co-create using 3D projected light forms, holographic energy blueprints. So if you think of movies like Minority Report or Iron Man or something like that, where they can throw the holograms up and then they can design and create things with this 3D hologram in front of them. So I know that there's certainly enough movies out there that show this technology, and they're really keen to have this technology and learning environment so that they could use it. They wanted to design ecosystems or musical patterns or even talk about things like architecture, with their ideas actually in the air, not necessarily on paper or on a physical computer. So they were wanted to play with that space. They also discussed the idea that you could be sitting around a campfire and having a campfire circle, but using light instead of a flame. So instead of a flame being the fire, you could actually use light, and then your ideas that you're discussing are taking physical form, holographic form in front of you while you're designing things in real time. So, you could have fields of geometry or hands reaching into the light, and you can really imagine what this could possibly look like. So that sort of gave them a bit of shock and awe. They're like, oh, wow, that would be amazing. So they were talking about this sort of technology, which is beyond the mainstream at the moment, but how long is it going to be until it's really here in the mainstream? We don't know. And then the other one was technological harmony. They were researching wearable or ambient technologies that harmonize body rhythms with natural cycles, heart, breath, circadian flow, rather than disrupt them. So that talked, they were talking about tech that listens to the body instead of demanding attention from it. Now that actually sparked a whole nother conversation around particularly the watches that a lot of them are using today, because a lot of them have these watches that have this electrical impulse right over their pulse. And we were talking about, is that harming their body because it's reading all of their data, their body's data, or is it hindering or is it harming? And there were very mixed emotions around that. Some of them really wanted to explore that whole conversation around transhumanism and, bionic legs, bionic eye. At what stage does the technology harm or hinder? And where do you lose technology? Where do you lose mankind and being human versus being possibly having the technology embedded into your system? And is that a slippery path to go down as well? So we did have a big discussion around that, and it was very interesting how many students. I was quite surprised. I thought a lot of the students would be very much for the technology and embedding it into their bodies, but there was actually a big pushback on the fact that does that make your body hackable if you've got, if you're being microchipped and things like this? Who's using the data, who's got access to the data, who's controlling the data. So it was quite clear that some of these children had some good discussions about this with their families, which was really heartening to know that they weren't just blindly going along with the next shiny gimmick. So yeah, it was really interesting. But if the technology that they were discussing was in harmony with the body, and if that actually existed, as a medical and helpful healing technology, then would they go for it? So some of them said they really needed to be convinced first before they would trial something like that. And then others said absolutely, if it was not harmful, then they would absolutely go for it. So these sorts of discussions were really interesting. And the fact that they were self-leading of their own opinions and they weren't being swayed by the group was really wonderful to sit back and observe. That true expression and that exploring of genuine questions, rather than being imposed of this is the thought, this is what you need to think, this is what you have to learn. They had to do the discovery for themselves, and it was just so valuable. And so that's all I have time for today, but I did want to bring up and sort of just share that and wrap it all up together, because there was just so much to bring out of this experience. It was a really rich experience, and I know that the students were really keen to do something similar next year and take a different topic, and they really loved that way of working, and I did want to bring that up for you. So the articles over the last few weeks, where I've got lots of activities that I have published to do with using technology, the use of AI, leadership, and of course, using circles, are all published on the BBS website. So bbsradio.com/all learning reimagined. And if you scroll to the bottom, you'll see all the past shows, all the archive shows, and all the articles as well that you can subscribe to. So thanks for joining me on All Learning Reimagined. Until next week, explore, experience, express. Go out and live learning.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.